Did you know it's the 60th anniversary of UC Irvine? To commemorate this anniversary, the Anteater Experience traces more than six decades of campus development since UCI's site selection in 1960. This exhibit illustrates key features and milestones that have helped shape the campus, culture, and environment. The Anteater Experience 60th Anniversary of UC Irvine is an exhibit that looks back on 60 years of growth, student life, UC Irvine's master plan, Aldrich Park, sustainability and conservation, as well as COVID-19 at UC Irvine. Using original campus photographs and documents, Anteater Experience demonstrates how UCI's layout and design, including its iconic circular shape and lush Aldrich Park, formed under the guidance of architect William Pereira. Known for its sustainability and conservation efforts, UCI has transformed over the last 60 years into an internationally recognized research institution. This exhibit will be on display in Langston Library from February through September 2025. All right, we are back. I'm Janine. This is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, and you're listening to Get the Funk Out. On the second half of the show, I have standing by Peabody Award-winning filmmaker, Michaela Schwer. She's going to talk about her latest film focused on the troubled teen industry, and the film is called The Kids Are Not All Right. The film is screening at DWFLA on June 29th, and there's some links and a log line and all kinds of information, as well as Michaela's bio on the show blog, which is getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org, and she's standing by now. Good morning, Michaela.
Good morning.
Congratulations on your film.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that.
So I want to dive into how you decided to focus on the troubled teen industry.
Sure. So I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona, and as a teenager, a lot of kids from my high school were sent to these programs, and, you know, it just was something where kids would almost disappear because they would go away for years and they wouldn't come back.
Wow.
And a kid named Aaron Bacon in my high school also died from my high school, and so I remember those news stories, and, you know, it was a confusing time because everyone was just like, oh, well, these are these bad kids that are being sent away.
Sure.
And about 20 years later, I was researching a different project, and I started reading about the troubled teen industry a little bit more, and I just started to realize the long-term impacts and the abuses that happened in these programs, and really realizing when kids came back and weren't really able to, you know, maybe they got into drugs or they weren't, you know, assimilating necessarily back into society. A lot of people wrote them off as, oh, well, they were these bad kids that went to these places, and now they're just still bad in a way. But nobody had really stopped to ask maybe if something had happened in these places. And I was learning about, you know, the suicide rate is alarmingly high, and the effects of this type of treatment really stay with people for a long time, for decades. And so that just became a story that I thought I hadn't heard, and I thought was important, and I became really drawn to tell.
And thank you for doing that. I mean, there's so much trauma to this, and it must have been really difficult and emotional actually making the film.
Absolutely. I'm a filmmaker who believes, you know, in telling, when you're telling these types of really personal stories, in building trust and relationships with the people in your film. And so it is, it's bearing witness to these stories is incredibly difficult. They are tough, but I was also just in awe of every person I met in terms of, you know, the resilience to move forward. A lot of people really started to, especially after the internet, when they could connect with people again, because before that, you actually couldn't find other survivors.
Really?
So as the internet came around, they really started to connect and fight for, to be heard, and to fight for accountability.
Wow. And so tell me the process of making the film. Did you know when you started what you were setting out to do, or did it unfold?
Definitely unfolded. I met Liz Iannelli, who is one of the main contributors in our film. I had heard, when I was doing an interview with a journalist, actually, an activist named John Martin Crawford had died by suicide that week. And she said, you know, there's this woman, Liz Iannelli, who's essentially looking to pick up where he left off. And I went and was in New York, and I went and met her within a few days and had no idea where the film was going to go or what it was going to be. And the film took 10 years, so it really, it, you know, took a couple different avenues. At first, it was very investigative. We had journalists and lawyers because we weren't really sure yet if people were going to believe the stories they were hearing. And over the years, with, you know, Paris Hilton came out about her story in these programs, and Me Too, it just really did feel like people were ready to listen to the survivors. So we actually took all of those people out so that you could just sit with three stories of people who went through these experiences. And also we just, Liz's journey is pretty incredible. I mean, we just kept following. You know, we thought we would stop the film in 2017, and then a few big pieces of legislation were passed in terms of the Child Victims Act, allowing people to file lawsuits for prior abuse, taking out the statute of limitations. And so it was pretty incredible just to keep following the story up until just this past March.
Wow. So it's good you had the time and you let it unfold over time and it wasn't a rushed project.
Absolutely. I mean, there are a lot of struggles to independent filmmaking, but one of the benefits is that you don't have that ticking clock of a deadline and a broadcast in a way. And so we were able to just stick with the story for as long as we felt we needed to and to make the film we really wanted to make.
So I can't help but think that the people that create these, you know, they're part of this troubled teen industry are just opportunists. And that, you know, what were some of the issues parents were struggling with that they felt compelled to send their kid away?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, in terms of the people starting them, I think, you know, this is a vast network of programs, and so it's hard to say what every person was thinking. But I do believe that some of them thought that they were doing good, and this idea of tough love mentality was popular at the time.
Okay.
But at the same time, it was a for-profit business, and so, like the private prison system, they have to fill beds, and sometimes at any cost.
Yeah.
And so they would take anyone. There was no real criteria for sending your child into these places, so it really was all over the map. I mean, you could be sent for, certainly if you were skipping school or you know, using drugs, but also some parents who just, you know, maybe their kids started wearing black nail polish and that scared them because it was the time of the war on drugs and satanic panic. And so I think some kids really were sent to these for just very normal teenage behavior.
Yeah.
And then some kids really needed help. They were dealing with depression or they were bipolar. And these places are just absolutely not equipped to handle kids in that state.
Sure. I mean, exactly. And then the long-term trauma for somebody that is suffering with mental health issues going to a place like that.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's one of the big red flags to me, is you're saying you can take children of all of these, you know, eating disorders or dyslexia even, and you're thinking that you can, you know, I'm going to put in quotes, fix them with this one-size-fits-all tough love mentality. And so that certainly was something that caught my eyes, that how can these places report to, you know, fix all of these things with this, and they're not really doing great intakes. It's just if you have money, they'll accept you.
Yeah. So tell me more about the film. What else would you like listeners to know?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a personal journey of three people who went through these places, and we really tried to focus on people with different experiences. So I mentioned Liz Iannelli, who after her best friend's suicide really picks up torch from him and goes on this activism journey. Catalina DeVille is a trans woman who had a unique experience because she was really sent away due to her identity. And these places, even if they aren't conversion therapy programs, often use a lot of anti-LGBTQ rhetoric and attack people for that. And so that's a unique trauma that we wanted to share.
Sure.
And then we have a parent. We have Cynthia Clark Harvey, who we thought was really important to include because she did everything right. You know, she did everything she could, all the research. And these people really prey on vulnerable parents. And so including her story felt really important to us because, in my view, the only real way to stop these places is actually to stop kids from being sent to them. And
yes.
So we do really want to reach parents who are struggling to, you know, watch the film, engage in these discussions, and help find them some answers as well.
That's fantastic. And so the film is going to be screening coming up June 30th, right, at Dances with Films, L.A.?
June 29th. So it's playing this Sunday, June 29th at 10 a.m. at the TCL Chinese Six Theaters in Hollywood as part of Dances with Films. Yeah.
Fantastic. And I put the trailer up on the show blog, which is getthefunkoutshow.kci.org. Where would you like to see this film go? Do you see it, you know, in other venues? Do you see it, you know, viewed in universities? Do you have any vision for this?
Yeah, we are actually about to embark on our educational distribution plan, which does include schools and conferences and impact screenings, really trying. Festivals are wonderful, but we also really do want to target audiences who need to see this film. And so we'll kick that off in the coming months. And then, we do hope to have the film for wider release at some point, but no news on that yet.
Well, I could imagine something with Mental Health America or NAMI or any of these mental health organizations.
Absolutely. Yeah, we want to target with an impact campaign, certainly survivors, parents, mental health advocates, juvenile justice advocates, legislators, and, you know, prosecutors. There are more people who worked in these programs are actually starting to face accountability, which is pretty rare. And so we just held a screening with the New York Attorney's Office in upstate New York.
Great.
And we're really looking for all avenues to try to support survivors, but also to help the community around survivors keep children safe, and then also really be able to engage in discussions with survivors after the fact.
Definitely. Well, what made me think of it, so I am a member of NAMI, but I noticed the Trevor Project had posted that funding is being cut, and it's really going to affect, you know, a lot of young people in the LGBTQIA community. And so that's wonderful. I could really see you collaborating and connecting with so many mental health advocacy organizations.
Absolutely. We certainly hope so.
Tell me a little bit about your backstory, because I know you've worked on a variety of things. You've won the Peabody, and I want to talk about that. How did you get to that place? Were you always a filmmaker, a writer?
So I am primarily, you know, my day job is a documentary editor. And so I've been working as an editor for about, you know, 15, 20 years. And I love that, you know, it's a really, I find it a fascinating part of the process, particularly in documentaries. And then, yes, this is my second film. So my first film was called Don't Tell Anyone, No Lo Digas a Nadie, which was about an undocumented activist who had her own advice column. And that came out in 2015 on PBS, POV. Mm-hmm. And that was the one where we were very honored to win the Peabody Award.
Mm. That must have been incredible.
Yes, I mean, it was, you know, a shock to us. We, you know, it was, out of all of the films of the year, you know, we thought it was just incredible for, you know, what we felt was our small film in a way to get that recognition.
That's fantastic. So what are you up to now? Obviously, you know, this film's coming out, but you're already working on your next project?
So I'm not working on a new directing project at the moment. I think we really want to focus on, you know, getting this film out in an impact way. Mm-hmm. And fully honestly, after 10 years of making it, I need a little break.
Sure.
But I'm editing, so I'm actually currently editing the Barbara Streisand documentary, which is a nice change of pace.
That's fun.
Yeah. So those are kind of I'm going to focus on getting this film really out to audiences this year and finish up that editing doc, and we'll see where things go from there.
That's fantastic. Tell me what advice you would give someone listening that wants to someday be doing the work you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. You know, the landscape has changed quite a bit, and so I think it's actually much harder to make films right now independently. That said, I think just believe in your idea. You know, there were so many times where we just weren't getting support, or, you know, it was a hard road to get here, but I'm so happy we all kept with it, because mm-hmm. we believed in our vision, we believed in the story we really wanted to tell, and I'm so happy to see audiences respond to that, and it feels really special to get it out there. So I would just say, stick with it. I mean, perseverance is the name of the game in documentary filmmaking, because it's a hard road.
Very hard. So it took you about 9 years to film this?
Yeah, it's coming up on 10 years since our first interview for this project.
Don't you feel sometimes when you step away, I had this conversation with my first guest, when you start something and then you step away for a bit, even if it's a short time, that you have a new perspective?
Certainly, and that's, you know, over the 10 years, we did kind of start and stop this project, whether it was due to funding or, you know, I needed to be really focused on another project. And sometimes it was just like, this is, you know, nothing. We're a little at a standstill where we feel in the edit or something. So we did purposefully take some time off from the project and in order to make sure we came back to it with the right lens, in a way. It was another gift of being able to, you know, have the ticking clock, in a way.
Yes. And I will say this, though, Michaela, that what's interesting is perhaps the families would not have been as open and ready to share 10 years ago that they are when you were, you know, finalizing it, because, you know, trauma is deep. It's deeply rooted.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, most of our contributors have been involved since pretty early on in our filming. Mm-hmm. But we took the time to make sure that, you know, there was trust along the way. I mean, even up until our first screenings and continued, you know, their safety and their, you know, belief in the film is really important to me, and I do feel it's a collaboration. I'm almost a vehicle to share their stories, but these are their stories, and so you know, building that trust was incredibly important all along the way.
That's fantastic. Any other festivals you'd like to share with us where this will be screening?
So we are finishing up about 6 months of touring with the film. We've won a couple awards, a couple audience awards and directing awards, which has been great. After this, we are going to the Wyoming International Film Festival, and we will be screening in Phoenix, Arizona, August 4th as part of the Phoenix Film Festival's summer screening series.
Okay.
And then we are still waiting to hear back from some places for the fall.
Exciting. Well, keep me posted, and I will add it to the show blog, because I have some of the other current festivals, like Dances with Films, coming up June 29th. It's 10 a.m., correct?
10 a.m., yes.
10 a.m., okay. The Chinese Theater is fantastic in Hollywood. Anything else you'd like to leave us with?
No, I mean, I'm just, you know, I know that these can be tough stories, but we feel they're just so important to be heard, and we really appreciate anyone who's engaging with them and wants to come see the film. And all three of our main contributors from the film will actually be there at the screening on Sunday, and so we're also holding a post-screening gathering to mingle and engage in conversations then. So we hope to see people there.
Fantastic. Michaela, thank you so much for calling into the show. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Be well.
Really appreciate it.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Okay, so that was Michaela Schwer talking about her film, The Kids Are Not All Right. And, wow, powerful film, shining a light on this hidden crisis. And just, you know, a way that she took the time over a 10-year period to amplify the voices of these survivors. It's a powerful call to action and one we all need to hear. If you want more information on the film, it is up on the show blog. Again, that's getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. Before I wrap up, I want to tell you that next Wednesday, I'm doing a special tribute show because last week, I lost a dear friend of mine, Jackie Krischer, and she was first featured on my show in 2016 with filmmaker Claire Immler, who created a short, powerful short about Jackie called No Limits. It's up on the show blog. I'm going to bring it forward because it's hard to find because it is 2016. I have every guest on my show blog. Jackie was just a powerhouse. She just inspired so many people, including myself. There's a great quote I live by. It's never too late to be what you might have been. That was Jackie. That's how she lived her life. And she was filled with these incredible stories, and she had so many friends, and she learned to swim at 82. She really wanted to hike Mount Kilimanjaro. And she was a cancer survivor. She raised awareness for Leukemia Society. There are just so many people that they have been touched by her in so many ways. So next week, I'm going to be speaking with her granddaughter, Lauren. She's going to call into the show. I'm going to feature anyone else who wants to call in, and then I'll probably re-air a conversation I had with Jackie. I just have to figure out which one because there's a few. She called in a few times. And again, I'll share the link to the film about Jackie. She became a triathlete in her 80s. She was always doing something, and she's just quite the inspiration, and she really touched so many lives and certainly made an impact in my heart. So I just wanted to share that with you. That'll be next week's show. And coming up at the top of the hour is SoCal New Waiver with Past Forward. If you want to find out about being a guest on my show, you can send me an email to Janine, J-A-N-E-A-N-E at KUCI.org. If you want to find out more about KUCI, all you have to do is visit KUCI.org and you see all of our shows, eclectic mix of music and public affairs programming. We have an incredible mix of talent here at the station. There's about 130 of us. And what else? If you missed any part of today's show, they will be up. Both segments will be up with Heather Clark and Michaela Schwer within an hour. And again, up next, SoCal New Waiver with Pass Forward. Fantastic show. And I am out, and I'll be back next week. Have a great weekend, everyone. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine.